and Rail 4. Now, we've just got something to sort out here, which is that the question of what the tanks were, the ACAC tanks, because you mentioned earlier that they were Crusaders, then Covenant, and I muddied the water by saying Churchill, so that's completely... They're not Churchill, so no, that's my fault. But you say the Crusader and the Covenant are fairly similar, yeah. And you now think back to... You think they were probably Crusaders.
I think the Crusaders were the ACAC.
So if we take it... that's fine, we can check it again later. Now, was there anything special about the Channel Crossing, just to go one step back from when you arrived at Cully? Do you remember the Channel Crossing at all?
Yeah, I remember it, yes. Just glad to get to the other side.
So nothing untoward?
No, not really.
Now, when the regiment arrived at Cully, could you describe how you'd arranged to lay them out in this big field?
Well, we just got tanks of their quarters in the soft vehicles set up there.
And were they separated?
Well, to a certain extent, yes, we put the tanks together.
And it was just one huge field? And B echelon weren't somewhere else?
No, they're all together.
And while you were there, I would just want to look at the sort of conditions. So you'd have your, by now, well, once the regiment arrived, you'd go back to your Crusader, ACAC tank. Now, what were your living conditions like for that? Now, you're there nearly a couple of weeks. What did you have as living accommodation? I mean, did you live in the tank, under the tank, or did you have a...
Yes, anywhere you could get.
Did they have a sort of bivouac tent for you? Because the Shermans had a bivouac tent off the back.
Yes, there would be. Yes, it's quite like you had a sheet that came out and you could put on it.
And what about food? Because they started on the compo rations, didn't they? What did you think of the compo? Well,
not bad.
The sort of different things. Actually, the compo. We'll talk about the hard tack. What did you think of the compo rations, the boxes?
They're all right. Some were better than others. Some were brilliant.
What were the good ones? What were the bad ones?
The good ones were they had the steak kidney in. The bad ones had the bully beef, I suppose.
You didn't like that?
Not particularly.
And what did you think of the compo system? Because they had the toilet paper and everything in it. Cigarettes. What did you think of that system of getting your rations?
It's all right. We carried them on the tank. A box.
And what about things like latrines? And how did you sort that out in your field? Had you dug some latrines?
Well, it's up to a tank crew to look at. Of course, they were self-contained, a tank crew. And it was up to them to do everything.
So where would your latrine be? Would you dig a proper latrine with a pole, or would you just have a hole? And while you were there, you're a concentration of armour and soft vehicles in the middle of a field in a small beachhead. Were you very much as anti-aircraft tanks? Were you much on the qui vive? Were you really ready? Did you expect to be in action?
Except there was nothing to fire at.
But were you ready for action?
Oh, we were ready. That's what we were there for. But our disappointment was we didn't see any planes.
So were you in sort of firing positions?
Yes, you would be encompassing the areas to fire at.
So you wouldn't have all the ACAC tanks together, they'd be scattered about round.
That's right. I'd be giving protection to our vehicles. But that's not real.
Were you disappointed or?
Well, I think we were. Definitely.
So you really disappointed this time?
Yes, because I remember going up with some vehicles one night and they dropped these phosphorescent baskets, which makes it like daylight. And we knew there was some planes there, and we wanted to open up, but the answer was no, so we didn't do anything about it. We were safer anyway.
In the area, there were supposed to have been some knocked out Shermans that people were taken to see. Now, did you go and see that? Not 5 and 4 fire Shermans, but Shermans from the earlier fighting. Did you go and visit any of them?
I saw knocked out tanks.
But you didn't pay any particular... You didn't go and visit?
It happened. I dropped my faith in Shermans.
Did that happen before they went into action?
They'd been in the... See, they were... The first day that tanks went into action, they got worked by.
Now, well, we'll move on to that, because that's Operation Epsom, the 26th of June, 1944, when they advanced on Shur.
That's right.
There was very heavy fighting, there's no two ways about it. Now, where were you during that fighting?
Behind the edge.
And were you in sort of firing positions again, or just travelling with them?
Well, we were travelling with the echelon for the purpose of giving cover to the echelon. But not in a fighting capacity, but purely...
So you were ready to go into action, but as you've mentioned before, never happened?
Ready to go into action against any aircraft that was threatening the echelon. As I say, that never happened.
So would you travel up with them to meet the main lager at night?
That's right.
And that first night, what were your impressions when you went to the main lager, the lager? Because they'd had a lot of... I mean, like C Squadron had lost 7 tanks, you know. Other squadrons had lost tanks. What were your impressions of that first night?
Well, that was the first time we realised we were no longer playing. It was serious. When we had people we spent a long time with had suddenly been killed, they said, on the first day, you realise that it was in earnest now. Nobody waving flags or saying you're dead.
Did that worry you?
Oh, I think so.
And so that first night... You were with the B. You'd go back with the B echelon from the lager then.
Yes, sir.
Now, the next couple. We don't expect you to go through it day by day, but the next 2 or 3 days were quite full of fighting, and then they went across the Odon to this point 112, I think it is. Mm-hmm. Now, what do you remember of that period of fighting generally? Or are there any specific things you remember? Or to you, was it just going backwards and forwards with the B echelon? And did you go with the A echelon as well?
Yes, it was tough for both echelons.
Depending on which you were assigned to.
Yes.
Now, what do you remember of that period of fighting?
Not a lot, except, it was just routine, I would say. Pure routine.
So a routine developed?
That's a job that you had to do. And
so what would a typical day be like for you during that period,
Just making sure that echelon was to be protected at all times.
So, no, but what I mean is, what would you do during the day? I mean, where would you be in relation to?
Well, if the echelon moved, you moved. If the echelon stopped, you stopped.
So you just stuck with... whichever echelon you were with. Which were you normally with? Or did you... very little between...
There's very little difference between the A and the B, anyway. The B was simply further back.
Now, the next big operation after Epsom was Goodwood, but for you, this was just another period of accompanying the B echelon, and you would not see what happened to the regiment.
No. You get back, but what was happening, we didn't do hell hammering there.
I presume that you were even more upset by the casualties then.
Yes.
It wasn't the first time, though, but now. Well, but
and we were also, with a little luck for the ICAC to do, as I said earlier on, we were ferrying the horse crews back.
Now tell me about that. What was that job?
Simply bringing the horse crews back. We lost their tanks.
Now where would you pick them up from?
Where would we find them? Get them on the tank and drive them back.
And what state were they in?
Oh, well, they weren't too bad, these boys.
Now, a lot of those crews were later on bombed. because there was a German air raid, a night air raid. Now, you weren't with them. Do you know much about that air raid? Or how did you? Because the raid was on the headquarters. It was what was it actually on? It wasn't on the B or A echelon. Was it on the glider field? Or?
Oh, that was a glider field, yes. That was a glider field.
So what do you remember of that, or hearing about?
Well, I wasn't actually the glider field, but I know that they took a hell of a banging.
And how did you feel? I mean, you were the anti-aircraft troop, and you weren't there. I mean, it wasn't your job to be there. You were meant to be with the B echelon. But how did you feel about it?
I didn't feel very happy at all, because it was a dreadful thing to happen. There were so many men there.
Now, then the next period is the ever-increasing pace of advance after they'd shifted to the other side. The reason I'm taking this through quickly is because this, for you, is a matter of routine. Of you were just accompanying the B&A echelons. Are there any incidents you remember before this time when you took over Bill Scott's tank, which I think we're going to deal with in detail?
Life was quite ordinary.
Did you meet the French population much?
Only when I got
wounded. So before then you hadn't met them much. No. And any other incidents that come to mind during that period with the ACAC tanks?
No, life was pretty quiet.
Now, how did you come to leave the ACAC tanks and get...
Well, the powers that be decided that the ACAC tank no longer had a role in life.
Now, this was because it wasn't being used.
Because there was no airplanes on the other side of it. So they simply took them away.
So they went. And what happened to you, the ACAC troop?
Well, all the crews went to the various squadrons, and I went to C squadron.
Now, what was the composition of C squadron at the time? Who was you weren't with them long, so you may not know, but who was the major commanding? Or
Spencer Nairn.
And what did you think of Spencer Nairn as your major?
That's a hard question. He was all right with Spencer then. He had a most peculiar... He was a strict disciplinarian. I think when you realise later on, he wasn't a bad lad at all. To judge somebody under peaceful conditions, and then certainly under fire conditions, you can find a different person. And I say he was one of those. He was a good officer, in other words.
Now, what troop were you in? Do you remember?
I speak to Bill last night.
Doesn't matter. Who was your officer? Who's a lieutenant?
I don't even know. I took over his tank in the morning.
Now, could you explain how you came? You were posted to C Squadron, and this, we reckon, you were there within 2 or 3 days. You were wounded on the 29th of August, just after crossing the Seine. So we're talking about you moved there about the 25th, 26th, 27th. This is why there's not much memory here of it. I mean, you wasn't long.
I was working alongside Bill Scott and his crew as his wireless operator.
For one period, you were his wireless operator.
Exactly.
Now, what was the job?
Never went anywhere at that time.
Could you just explain now for us what the job of wireless operator was?
Just operate wireless and you loaded the guns as well.
Now, the wireless.
I never did it.
When had you been trained in the wireless? Because.
Well, I'd done the wireless ops course, back in England, as we all did.
So you'd all done that. And what did you think of the 19 set?
Well, at the time, very efficient. I mean, nowadays they wouldn't pass anywhere, but I mean, those days were very efficient things.
Did you find it complicated, the A, the B, and the intercom?
No, and actually, if you've done your course, and then it's like everything else, you can handle it.
And the other role was as loader. Now, what did that entail? So putting the actual shell in.
You
never did it, but did you learn how to? I mean, the layout of the shells is quite important in the turret.
Truthfully, I had no training at all getting into the show, because it was just done away with the archive tanks and they posted us to various places.
So, although, I mean, you'd done a wireless course, and you knew what to do as loader, but you'd never trained in it particularly. You were inexperienced.
Right.
You weren't ignorant, but you were inexperienced. Now, what was Bill... Do you remember any of the other members of the crew of Bill Scott's tank, which became your tank when...
The diver was Frank McGlashan.
Frank?
McGlashan. Yeah. And I can't remember the... Cliff? I don't know his second name. Cliff was the gunner. And I can't remember that one.
And Scott?
Well, he wasn't there.
He was there at first, wasn't he?
Oh, yes. He was a tank. He was a tank at that time.
Was he a sergeant by then?
He was a sergeant.
And... How was he then? I mean, you've been friends with him all the time. Now, he was a sergeant, and were you still a trooper, or you were a corporal. How did he change at all with all the responsibility?
Oh,
now, what had happened to Bill? Because he was only with you a day or so, and he went. What was up with him?
Well, his problems started a long, long time before that. He had a dicky stomach. But he really hid the fact that he had this problem. But when we went across to France and he was on the hard tack and the bully beef, it said he had to go sick. They sent him back to the UK.
So you took over?
So I took over his tank.
Now, what was the job of tank commander as far as... Again, you were untrained in this. What was the job in tank commander? You'd commanded an anti-aircraft tank, but it's different, isn't it?
Well, yes. I mean, you had a spoon for everything in the tank. And we had done this force march up the previous day.
Now, tell us about the force march up, then.
Well, it was a very dry, warm, and as you know, these roads in France are very chalky. And of course, what happened when we got in the leader that night, everybody's eyes were hanks, so you know, bloodshot and red. So we took down to the environment because when we started the next day.
Now, this is. So the force march took you to the Seine. Did it take you across the Seine?
No.
Right. So this is before you crossed the Seine. And the eye problems, how bad were they?
Well, our eyes were all very badly puffy and swollen with this lime.
Didn't you have goggles?
Nothing would keep that stuff out. It's everywhere. And we went down there and we got stuff to wash our eyes. But when we set off the next day, it was raining, pouring down the rain. And we were using the leapfrog formation tank for them. At the time, I was leading tank at the time. And
do you remember crossing the Seine then?
Just, I can still remember that.
Because there's supposed to be a bit of a bottleneck there. Do you remember that?
Really?
It's not something you remember. And then, so you were advancing.
Yep.
And you took a turn as lead tank.
That's right.
Now, this is, I think, C Squadron bumped into some opposition at Guitry, where they had two tanks damaged. You think this is you? So that would be the 29th of August. They can sort that out exactly. Now, what exactly happened then? You were lead tank.
I was leading tank. I pushed him under, and I saw in front of me a little copse, which I was a bit suspicious of. So I stopped to have a look through the glasses. Because I couldn't see a damn thing, but then we put the glasses up. They all steamed up, and the colonel came on me and said, "No, move on, this place has been raided, move on." He hardly said that, it was an 88 in the cop to hit me in the territory.
Now, what was it like when you were in the turret, when an 88 shell hit a Sherman turret? Can you just give us an idea of what it was like?
It was pleasant, tell you that.
What happened?
The gun turret was completely jammed.
It couldn't move.
No, it couldn't.
Did the shell penetrate?
No, it didn't. But it completely—it must have fused the metal on the tank, because it wouldn't move one way or the other. It was absolutely stuck.
And did, what was it, I mean, what was the concussion like, or the explosion like in the turret for you? Did you have your head out of it for a start?
Oh yes, I did, because I was looking at this.
And it hit whereabouts in relation to you?
Just like on the turret thing in the front. Just
in front, just in front of you?
Yeah, above the driver and front of the turret thing.
And the gun was pointing straight?
The gun was pointing straight, it wouldn't go anywhere else.
So, and what was the explosion like? Did it explode, or was it just a crash?
It was just a crash.
It was a armour piercing. So it didn't explode.
Yeah.
And what happened? Were you and the wireless operator? Was everybody all right in the crew?
Well, the damn thing stalled. And it wouldn't go, and the gun wouldn't traverse.
Now, why did it stall? Was that to do with the driver just lost his...
No, I don't think so. Because eventually we got hit up the back end with, I think, a bazooka or something, which...
Hang on. So it stalled,
yeah,
but you don't know why it stalled.
Now, stalled.
What about bailing out? I mean, the 88 had a terrible reputation. Which
we got out.
Did you? How did you bail out? So
we all bailed out. And I knew...
How do you bail out of a Sherman as quick as possible? It's pretty easy for you, I would imagine.
Oh, yes, you're the first one out.
What about the other crew?
They all had, because the gun was straight ahead, so you get your driver and could have it.
They were all right, because that's what I wanted to ask, because the turret stopped.
The turret had been the other way around, they may have the job, but because they got out.
Did the tank catch fire at all at that stage?
I don't know.
You don't know. No. What about, were you aware, we should have mentioned this earlier, of the Sherman's reputation for catching fire at the time?
Very much so.
In what way? What did you worked out about the Sherman? And
well, I think he referred to Sherman as an Anson lighter. We knew it went up very easily.
And
I'd seen them, you know, knocked out Shermans when we'd been there, burnt out, etc.
So now the Ronson lighter's advertising is that they light first time, isn't
right.
it? And that's what the reputation was.
Exactly.
How did you feel about that when you were in Sherman as lead tank?
I just wanted out. Oh, you mean before it happened? What else can you do? I mean, you're there and you've got to do it.
Did it make you nervous?
I suppose so.
Because you hadn't had a lot of experience to be lead tank.
Just one last thing.
What was the atmosphere like in the tank? It's another thing I just like to put in. I mean, as you were travelling along the road in the tank, what was it actually physically like? The noise, the smell?
Very noisy, of course. One thing about being part of a tank crew is that you all gel. You're very much a unit. And every man looks after the other one. There's no comradeship anywhere other like a tank crew. Because every man has to do something. Everybody knows that if they don't do it, you're weak. And that's a great thing. I've never met friendship, comradeship anywhere as an attendee.
Now, you said it was noisy. What else about the environment? What sort of noise was it? Was it the tracks? What was it making the noise? Or the engine?
The engine's noisy. The tracks are noisy. Just noisy.
And was it... Did it get on your nerves, the noise? Or was it sort of...
I don't think so, because it's like everything else when you're in a situation. You don't hear everything. It's like being in a situation that... I used to live at home. I lived on the side of a railway in a station there. And in those days, the big steam trains came through. Now, when you lived there, you never heard them. But somebody else came and said... How can you stay here with this noise? We get used to it.
And the same with the noise of the tank.
Now,
what about the how was it stuffy in the tank, or what was it?
A bit stuffy, yes.
Did it smell?
Well, I suppose it did.
What of?
Just hot.
Not the not engine fumes or cordite fumes.
Well, we hadn't.
You hadn't fired.
But engine fumes, yes, oil fumes coming up. Because it's hot, and the engine's hot.
They're supposed to have been cooler, the Shermans, because they took they sucked in the air from the engine to from the front. But were you aware of that?
No, it's still hot.
Still hot. Now, we get back to the story. So you'd been hit, and the turret had jammed, the engine had stalled, and you'd bailed out, all of you. Now, the 88 was still in front. Had it fired again while you were bailing out?
I don't know. You're getting out. And I knew that I knew where they all were, except the driver. And I never knew what happened to the driver. I heard one of my crew being hit.
How? But what by?
Snipers. We were by a railway, and this is where we were coming. That's when we got picked up. Because it came out and picked us up.
Now, so you came under small arms fire. So what did you do?
Well, my intention, this all happened in a tunnel field. And I knew that there was a sunken road. And I thought, and now if we can get back there, if there's a thing, we can get maybe back to the other tanks coming up and sort this lot out. And I was going towards the sunken road head first.
Now, had the bazooka or whatever hit the tank from behind at this stage? Yeah. When had that happened?
I'm sorry?
The bazooka, you said.
Something hit us.
From behind?
Yes.
You'd already got out by then?
Well, you were just getting out when it
happened. Oh, so that was earlier. So
yeah.
So you don't know what it was. It could have been another shell, but it was from behind.
I don't know.
Right. So what happened? You were going towards the sunken road.
It's because I came to try and get some help, and I knew that one of the two had been hit because I heard him.
But he shouted, he cried.
Obviously, when he was hit, I was going there, and I don't know why, but something said to me to turn round, and I did, and I turned round, and I went backwards, and I got shot to the foot. Where 2 or 3 minutes earlier, my head would have been, so I would have been here or there. And then we got picked up.
Now, how did they actually take you prisoner? Because it's not easy to take prisoners. I mean, how did they actually do it without...
It came out. It was quite a crowd of them. They knew we were in the stand-up field.
And how did they treat you on actually taking...
They did us very well. They did.
How did they... what happened?
Well, they... He tended to our wounds.
Straight away?
Yes, because when he got up, somebody went fly with him, press his leg down here with some bullets. No, they looked after us very well. They had very little to offer, but they did. And they said that they would be pulling out, and they put us into a barn and said, you know how your tanks sometimes just go through things. If you hear them coming, you yell. But they went away. There was a battle. You could see the tracer back and forward, but they pulled out. And
so they left you?
They left us. And we got picked up by some civilians who came out and picked the two of us up, took us into this village and put us into the biggest bed I've ever seen. And we're making a bed for fuss with us. And the one thing which I think both of us would have loved would have been a cup of tea, which we eventually got, but not quite the tea that we were used to, because it was laced with cognac. And eventually I got hold of somebody who spoke a bit of English, and I said, look, if there are any British people, will you tell them what you... I had visions of spending the rest of this bloody war in this bed. And sometime after, a big Reckie sergeant from some other unit came in and said, oh, you're doing well here. And he arranged for us to be picked up, and we eventually came back to the UK. As I said, I never knew what happened to my driver.
Still?
No. I didn't know where he was. I was in hospital. In Worcester, went from Worcester to Leinster.